the idea that an imperfection during a presentation is not something that should be quickly pushed away and pretend that it didn't happen. It can actually be embraced and be a way to connect more deeply with the audience in a shared humanity.
Hey, it's Chris, and welcome to the Between Dreams podcast. This episode is with Don Colliver, and we're chatting ideas from his new book called Wink, Transforming Public Speaking with Clown Presence. Now, you may or may not be a public speaker professional, and you may or may not have any desire to do so. But I really think the ideas and thoughts and concepts that we talk about in this episode are really relevant to anyone, because at some level, we're all public speakers in needing to learn how to communicate and connect with our audience in an engaging way. So we're going to jump right into it. Here is my conversation with Don Colliver.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, thank you for inviting me. What a pleasant surprise. You've been in my orbit for a while, and it was great to get a message from you. But yes, I'm Don Colliver. I'm your standard multi-hyphenate, currently primarily a teacher, writer, but also a presenter and performer. And I just released this book, Wink, Transforming Public Speaking with Clown Presence. And yeah, background as a clown into professional presenter for mostly tech companies at tech trade shows, into facilitator and instructional designer for Google and other tech companies up here in the Bay Area. And that brought me to writing to help people. So here we are.
I think those things, as you say, are easy bridges to cross because you've lived it, and you could see how easy that is to bring the performer, live performer, clown specifically elements into traditionally not where those elements would live in tech companies and corporate settings and helping people with those. So let's go back in time and talk a little bit about that, of how did you bridge that gap and what was that spark that happened in your mind that you saw, oh, these elements of being on stage and, you know, connecting with an audience are actually really useful and relevant in this different setting. And then after that, we'll kind of dive, that'll lead us into some more specifics about the book as well.
My background's pretty twisty-turny. I was a nonfiction television producer for like 15 years in Los Angeles for HGTV and Food Network and that sort of thing. And I found improv comedy during a really crappy divorce, actually. And it was one of those things I did I'm going to do this just for me and just for fun. And it was also one of those things where suddenly I was like, where's this been all my life? This is great. I love it. I'm good at it. I'm just being myself and bringing pleasure to other people. Like, I love this. And so that brought me into that. So every choice I made in comedy was purely out of love. There was never any income thought of it. I already have a career, like pre-nonfiction television producer. I was a corporate training producer of videos in Detroit for the big three automotive. And I moved out to LA to do documentary kind of stuff. And that's what landed me in nonfiction TV. Not reality, I want to specify, nonfiction. And I kept just making choices purely out of like, does this feel good to my heart? Does this feel like fun? And that brought me into theater sports, which brought me into UCB, which I went through UCB. And there's a wonderful indie improv, kind of UCB focused, at least when I was down there, scene, endless opportunities to get on stage and practice and have fun and have a community. And that kind of brought me into clown, because someone was doing a physical comedy workshop at IO. I think it was over some improv festival. It was like a 2-hour physical comedy workshop. And what this person was doing was actually clown work. And because they kept, like, they would be doing bits and they'd look up at us in the audience and kind of take in our response. And you don't do that in improv. I was like, what's that? That's great. And just happened to be at the same time, Cirque show called Iris, I believe it's Iris, but I think they called it Iris, closed at the Kodak Theater, what was the Kodak Theater. And John Gilkey, who was one of the clowns for that, who's like a very established and accomplished bit developer for Cirque, started teaching classes. And so I jumped into some of his first classes, and then he started a small group called Wet the Hippo in Hollywood Fringe Festival. And I was lucky enough to be invited to play in some of the additional shows of that. And then we went on a little tour, and that led to other things. But all throughout, I was kind of just making choices on, does this feel good to me? Like, is this, because clearly every second I was like, there's no way I'm ever going to make any money in this. And I'm going to keep my corporate kind of stuff going, and this is for pleasure. And so, and then that was my background. But what was your question?
That was great. The question was, yeah, that was cool. It was kind of like that, building that foundation of where that came from. And then the second part of that, and I think I will certainly circle back to some of that John Gilkey world, improv clown world in some level. But the next part of that question of laying those foundations of clown and improv, and then where did that bridge come to bring it back to, you know, not just performing on stage for audiences in a room in LA, but bringing it to a different type of audience in the corporate tech kind of world that you are currently living in?
Totally. Yeah. So doing all that and the stuff, you know, we were doing was definitely not flavored for corporate consumption in any way. But it was really great and really fun. And I started like thinking, man, I really love doing this. Is there some way I could do this and be paid, not in like a talent way, but be paid in like to talk to companies who can afford to hire someone like me and pay me what my day rate is and kind of use the full spectrum of my skill set? And the immediate one-to-one was trade show presentations, because sometimes companies, less so these days, they'll hire a spokesperson at trade shows to kind of pitch all day, like give like a 8 to 12 minute speech all day long repetitively and gather a crowd and just speak to the crowd, talk about their product. And when I got my first gig in that, I was like, this checks all the boxes. I could be a complete goofball, be of service to this company. And I was used to being a producer director. So I was used to being the person like, oh, do you need some water, Mr. Talent? And all of a sudden people were like bringing me water. I was like, this is amazing. And so, yeah, so that was my first angle at that. And then simultaneously, I was kind of just through meeting people and developing my skill, I was kind of progressing in the clown world. I ended up going on tour for Spiegel World and learning some bits from established clowns. And that was wonderful, wonderful experience. I auditioned for Blue Man, and then Blue Man invited me out. They trained me for a year to be a drummer and then invited me out to LA for their really challenging training program, which is like 6 or 7 guys go like a year, and then something like 2 of them make it through the training. I was one who did not, but it was grueling. And I did 1 show for Blue Man, but kind of that experience kind of pointed me more towards, okay, like, I think I should look more into how to bring this skill to companies, because I can speak that language, because I've been producing for corporations since I started working. And I wasn't coming at it as like a talent person. I was coming at it more as a producer person. And that just made it a lot easier for me to speak to those folks. And so then I started focusing more on that.
Awesome. Yeah, I think it's cool, because it's like, in especially in performer world, there's probably a bit of resistance from most people to be like, well, I don't want to sell out and, you know, abandon going like performing for the audiences in the traditional sense. So I think that's a really cool to think about it of, you know, it's not just about making more money or anything like that. It's about utilizing those skills and those perspectives and reaching a bigger audience ultimately and helping a lot more people. So I love that. And so let's get into a little bit of, so I, we promised to keep this one really tight and concise. So I want to like leave people with a little bit of some of the thoughts from the book, and I'll leave this with, you know, one of the key things as I got a chance to skim the book. I didn't get a chance to dive fully into it, but
thank you.
Really want to think about this idea that you ask in the book is, what do I want them to know, feel, do after the presentation? So I think that's really important kind of guiding principle in all of it. It's not about, oh, I want to tell my story for the sake of me sharing, you know, these great things that I did or whatever it is, whatever you're talking about, but really focusing on what are people going to get out of it. And we'll try to utilize that principle in our short podcast here today. So I want to just give the audience a quick overview and just like right off the top, there's the five P's of clown presence. First, personal confidence, preparation, partnership, imperfection, and play. Now, I know we don't, there's this literally the basis of the entire book, so we're not going to be able to dive super deep into that, but we'll leave the floor kind of open to you here to, is there some kind of like overview general that we can bounce through and hear a little bit and we can take away a little bit, maybe from a key couple of these, or you can touch on all of them if you would like.
I think it'd be easier just to speak to kind of a thesis of the book, kind of, because the personal confidence chapter I struggled with. I had to rewrite it a few times because there's so much in that. And I think it speaks to what you talked about before about the why are you presenting? Are you trying to tell them something about yourself? Are you trying to give them something? Like, I think even before that, for me, it's like sitting with what's my intent and what's my motive really behind getting up. And this gets into therapy and all kinds of stuff like that. Like, what box am I trying to check with this? Because the more I read and the more I meditate, it's like being present in the moment, being like, that's the thing. And everything we're talking about is like building for the future and like hustling and this and that. And whereas these days I'm trying to be okay with things unsolved. I'm trying to be okay with problems not fixed, as opposed to like constantly finding a new thing to fix, which, you know, and I think, yeah, this is getting a little bit esoteric and this is not really in the book, but it does have to do with the personal confidence chapter, which at its baseline is you are enough. You're already enough. And what do you need to do to get to that realization? And that doesn't mean fix anything. That means do whatever personal work you need to do, resolve any kind of childhood stuff, so you can come into it and not be needing something from your audience. Because I see a danger of, like, even when you paint over what you're doing as being of service, it's like, is it really being of service, or are you really trying to fill something in yourself? You know what I mean? Because that's a very kind of benevolent phrase, and a phrase I use in the book a lot. Like, it's a great way to, in the book, I specifically mentioned, it's a great kind of solution for stage fright. If like you're really spun up, oh my God, I hope they like me. I hope I can fulfill all their expectations. If I can shift my mindset to, I actually have something that they don't have and I want to give it to them. I want to be of service here. How can I most effectively do that? Even if there's communication difficulties or hiccups in the presentation, or you get some kind of pushback in the presentation. If the bottom line is like, I'm really trying to bring this information to you folks, you can kind of be like, okay, you didn't work for you. That's cool. Like I was trying to bring this to you, but that's fine. Like, I am enough as myself. I didn't need you to accept it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I love that. And I've talked about it before and my mind is blanking. There was a Cirque du Soleil clown who saw me do a juggling act at a place in Vegas, like an underground variety show. And he came up to me afterwards and said, stop trying to get something from the audience. I was trying so hard to get a bigger applause or get a bigger something, get a bigger response from them. And it was like, do your juggling bit. They don't need to be cheering the whole time. They might be silently appreciating it, enjoying it, and getting their own way out of it. And it was similar to what you just said. It was, I can do my thing, whatever it is, if it's speaking, juggling, whatever it is, and let the thing be the thing. Some people are going to really enjoy it. Some people might not get what they, you know, what you intended out of it. But instead of trying to get something out of it, allow that to be delivered and land where it may. So yeah, it really resonates.
Yeah, it's really getting into some of the technicalities of clown work, because a lot of clown is that. It's like, and I talk about it in the imperfection part of the book, of like a clown bit, as far as I'm concerned, and there's many different views on this, is entering to do something for the audience, to perform something. Something goes awry, you share that imperfection and vulnerability with the audience, and then you keep trying, and it fails again in a different, more fun way, share it with the audience. And this repeats until maybe the clown backs into some sublime, unintended, but beautiful finale. And, you know, on the surface level, the clown is always trying to please. But I think it's a different thing happening with the performer. The performer has to have some distance to that. And when I was learning, that energy of pleasing was very familiar to me and helpful to in learning. But it's something that I needed to do and then set aside and then have awareness of it and then get some distance from it. Because I think one thing I learned when I was performing for money was, if you bring that need to please to a daily show, it is not sustainable, and it'll rip your heart apart. Like, that's not, you can't put your well-being on each show. It's not sustainable. Yeah.
Yeah. Can we touch on a little bit of going back to, you mentioned John Gilkey. There's probably a very small audience percentage that will know that name, but not a 0%, certainly with my audience coming from live performance in that world. You know, being willing to fail, and literally in that style of the idiot on stage, it's actually a good thing. And can you talk a little bit about that? About, I think there's like that willingness, and, you know, as a speaker, a presenter, there is that feeling of wanting to look cool. And I think anyone who particularly like gets up on stage, like, kind of, we always have that little bit of that feeling of, we want to be the rock star. And if we kind of remove that away and are willing to not be the rock star, and you talk about, a little bit about this being vulnerable and actually removing that kind of front, I guess, of trying to be the rock star, epic, everything is perfect. Is there some touch on that you can bring from that, you know, really clowning stuff of not, I think it's the not trying to be so cool, which is the way to be really cool, you know, it turns out, is, you know, not, and it goes back to not asking so much of the audience to, you know, get up and cheer and have those moments. Yeah, I think that might be just mirroring what you just said, but is there anything else on that resonates?
Yeah, I can't really speak to Idiot Workshop stuff these days, because I think the curriculum has changed a lot since I was in it. But I also want to give a shout out to the clown school. I learned an immense amount going through their levels of clown, kind of in a different way. Idiot Workshop, when I was there, focused a lot on the grotesque, whereas clown school was a very supportive environment towards the vulnerability aspect of what you're talking about. And as far as public speaking, and the book is really angled at folks who have some experience, maybe they have to speak at work sometimes or in their volunteer groups. These are non-performer folks. So for professional clowns, this is all this stuff is going to be, yeah, of course. But this is for more, I saw it as the Toastmasters audience. I spent a long time in Toastmasters. Yeah. And the idea that an imperfection during a presentation is not something that should be quickly pushed away and pretend that it didn't happen. It can actually be embraced and be a way to connect more deeply with the audience in a shared humanity. There's a quote from a book, I think it's called by John Wright, and the book is called Why Is That So Funny? And I may butcher this quote. And it's something like, a suppressed laugh quickly becomes a sneer. And the way I hear that is, if I spill water during my presentation and I don't acknowledge it, I just keep going, the audience is going to be like, is he going to like acknowledge that he just spilled that water? Or, and they're not going to be hearing what I'm saying anymore. And they're probably going to be like, this guy's really nervous. He can't even acknowledge what just happened. Or I don't know if you've ever been, I've been in presentations, or if you've been in presentations where there's a car alarm going off and that presenter will not acknowledge that car alarm. They will just keep on powering through to get to the end. And as the audience, I'm like, please just acknowledge it. Then I can let it go and we can like share in this moment together. There's a idea of complicité. It's like a Lecoq term, which is clown. But the way I see it is like, if you start your presentation on two sides of a table, right? And I'm like talking across to you, I want you to understand this. If you can build complicité, you both get to the same side of the table and you're kind of sitting together and looking at this third thing and working together to get a shared understanding of that. And kind of the way through to that, and the kind of the route I give in the book, is finding pleasure in that communication. And the Lecoq term is le jeu. And again, there's many different interpretations of this in the world of clown, but I see it as like, I'm so happy to talk to you, Chris. I'm, you know, no matter what happens, the fact that I have the privilege of just interacting with you as another human being, that's great. And that can lead to us both getting on the same side of the table.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's something that I always try to think about when getting on stage, was before the show, looking out at the audience and just inside my head, like acknowledging each individual, like, and you know, if you do it to three of them, that thank you so much for coming here. And I can't wait to share what I'm going to do with you, thinking of the people as individuals as well. So that's awesome. So why don't we wind this, wrap this all up, keep it tight. And somebody is listening to this and, you know, as kind of before we started recording, I mentioned how I think a lot of this stuff is relevant to, even if you're not a traditional, you know, public speaker, I think everyone is a public presenter in some way. So if you could wrap it up and tie that up into something that is something that people could kind of remember when they're presenting, whether it's for a traditional presentation in front of a large audience at a company, or even just in everyday life, presenting your ideas. Is there a little bit of a wrap up that you could kind of leave people if they don't actually dive fully into this, but a little bit of a summary of what they will walk away with if they do read the entire book and dig deeper into your work?
Yeah, I think if folks took away one thing, it's if you do have to give some kind of a message to a group, you owe your audience not just the message, but you're kind of leaving something out if you don't bring yourself to it. And in fact, that might be the most interesting, most fun, or even if it's a serious thing, that may be the most meaningful thing you bring to that, is not your message, but yourself. And that includes your imperfections. That includes your humanity. So I work with a lot at Google. I work with a lot of folks who are non-native speakers, and they're very aware of grammar and worrying about not getting it right. And I get that, and that's important. But at the same time, there's something bigger than just the words. And if someone lets that out, man, you just love them. You love the humanity, no matter what the words are. So a lot of the book is talking about getting down to being like, I am enough already. What I say is important, and there's a chapter about that, but the real thing that's going to connect with an audience is myself.
Amazing. So people are intrigued and want to dive a little bit deeper into the book and more of your work. Where would you like to send them to find out some more info?
Sure. Well, Wink, Transforming Public Speaking with Clown Presence, is available on Amazon, like paperback, ebook, and any second now audiobook. It takes a while for that to come up. And then I have virtual classes at winkpublicspeaking.com. So if you're interested in that, go enter your email address there and I'll let you know the next one. Otherwise, I pretty much roll on LinkedIn these days. So just connect with me on LinkedIn. That'd be great.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining. Really appreciate that. And again, obviously anyone who's listening that wants to dive in deeper, listen to the last 30 seconds and check out some more of that stuff and connect to either of us on LinkedIn. That's a great spot to do it. So thanks so much for joining and sharing.
Thank you, Chris. This was awesome. Appreciate it.